Hello and welcome to The Price of Football, a show that looks at the money behind the beautiful game and is the only podcast to tell you exactly how much football coming home is going to cost. I'm a slightly hoarse Kevin Day. It's amazing how much of that game I spent shouting at Harry Kane. And he is Liverpool University's Kieran Maguire. Kieran, I really hope we don't play Switzerland in the final because things are tense enough between us and Swiss Ramblers it is.
Yes, yeah, because he was getting very excited during the Switzerland match. I was following his Twitter feed and some of the language from a man of such refinement. I was staggered.
What, French and Italian, you mean? Or,
yeah. Yes.
Although I have to say, I know we don't talk about football. That Swiss equaliser, I was so excited. We all went completely. Kieran, I need to warn you. It's going to be a long pod. I need to warn you that for a start off. So we've got a lot of stories, but there may be sound effects in the course of it because I'm not in the office at the moment. I'm in the back room, and my dad's here, and he's in the front room, and he's watching Planet of the Apes with the sound turned up to 11. And we have a film crew here filming a charity thing with Ali, and they've brought a very excitable dog with them, which means my cat is currently halfway up a tree, three houses down. So there may be stuff going on in the background as we speak. It's nothing as clever as your dog opening doors. It's just a really excitable dog that's...
Adds to the ambiance of the show.
Yeah, I hope so. There's always a nice ambiance. This one might be more excitable than usual. And later in this show, we will hear from Niall Cooper. He's from the Dons Trust, who are the owners of AFC Wimbledon. But he's also a director of Fair Game UK, a collective of English and Welsh league clubs who want to change the governance of the game. And boy, have they come to the right pod.
Yes.
I think we can agree, Kieran. It's a lengthy interview, but it deserved to be, and it's a very, very good one. But before that, we have some news. In fact, we have loads of news, so we need to crack on. I wonder, sometimes that happens. I don't know whether it's because Guy just reads the papers more or whether it's just because some things happen in some weeks and not in others, but he's really pulled out some news stories this week.
Yes. Well, mainly because he follows my Twitter feed.
Oh my word, this is Poppy's eating itself, isn't it? The first story is a good news one, Kieran. It doesn't really matter what it costs, but we need to discuss it anyway. The Premier League is going to provide defibrillators to 2,000 grassroots clubs. What will that cost, Kieran? Not that it matters. It needs to be done.
It costs what it costs as far as the Premier League is concerned. And this is on top of existing funding to grassroots football. So you know what governments sometimes do is say, yeah, we're going to spend more money on X because it means taking money away from Y. But the Premier League have made it very clear that this is additional funding to the £100 million they already give to grassroots football. And I think this is on the back of clearly what happened in the case of Christian Eriksen, or we had Patrice Mwamba as well. Yeah. And the way that they're doing it is that those clubs who are already under the umbrella of the Football Foundation, they can apply to a fund and they will get that money before the start of season 21-22. And there's going to be a phase two for other clubs who aren't yet covered under the Football Foundation. But the aim is still to get these 2,000 defibrillators by September 2021. At the latest, somebody at every club clearly will have to be trained on how to use them, which makes a lot of sense. And as somebody that lives fairly close to Buxted, where the recently two youths, shall we say, thought it was hilarious to wreck one of the defibrillators at that club, I just hope that people will do the right thing. I think the people involved at Buxted have been fairly publicly shamed through their actions, and this makes a difference. If you get a defibrillator to somebody quickly, it is the difference between life and death. So fair play to the Premier League, hats off to them, and also the Football Foundation and the FA, who are also supporting this scheme.
Yeah, the only drawback is that young men being young men, especially young men who play football, there will inevitably be a club who does a defibrillator goal celebration. which will lead to condemnation in the press and people pretending it wasn't anywhere near as funny as it probably was when they did it. But it's a great, it's just such a shame, Kieran. This should have been done after the Mwamba thing happened, really. I mean, Gabby Yorof's brother, God rest him, died when he was 15. Same thing. This is something that should be at every club. And as we say, the cost doesn't matter, and it's brilliant that it's been implemented finally. The SPFL, Kieran, has asked clubs to consider an expansion to 48, so therefore four divisions of 12 in Scotland. There are 42 at present. So who would the new clubs be, and what's the benefit other than the fact that four goes into 48 more easily than it does 42? Well, for me, it does, Kieran. Maybe not for an accountant. I mean, the easy experience probably doesn't.
Well, the benefits are at present it's quite a challenge for clubs from the Highland League and the Lowland League to get into the SPFL. But we've also got the issue of Colts teams from both Rangers and Celtic. It looks as if they will be joining. So for the next, it looks like for the next 2 to 3 seasons, the way that it's going to work, there's going to be no relegation. And one side's going to come up from the Highland League. One side's going to come up from the Lowland League. The Colts teams potentially are going to go from Rangers and Celtic. I think those Colts team are going to find it pretty tough, because I would imagine if you're going up to the Scottish Highlands and you've had the relatively cosseted existence of being at a Premiership club where they've got plenty of resources, and you're playing on pitches which perhaps aren't as pristine as what you're used to, against blokes who are working full time for a living and playing. Playing football on a part-time basis, it's going to be a rude awakening to these young players. But I think Rangers and Celtic both feel it will give them invaluable experience. So that's one of the issues. At present, the SPFL do have a TV deal, which is split between 42 teams. So that now it's going to be split between 48. So it could be a wee bit less money going out. The side that presently finishes the bottom of League Two gets £45,000. So, for some of these clubs, for the Highland League, the Lowland League, when they do get promoted, it will be, we're talking a few tens of thousands, but that it gives them the opportunity to go through the Scottish pyramid if they are successful. And we're all in favour of that. You've only got to look at how clubs historically, such as Wimbledon and Wigan, have done amazingly well this side of the border to see what can be achieved.
When you say no relegation for three seasons, that's from League Two, presumably, is it? Or is it going to halt?
Yes. So that'll be that. Sorry, just from League Two to the Highland or Lowland League. So it will give some relief to those clubs, because there's always kudos with being in as part of the SPFL, and I monitor all of the Scottish clubs as well as the English clubs. And one of the things that I've noticed is Scottish clubs tend to live within their means to a much greater extent. Now, it could be that part of the reason for this is that the way that the SPFL divide money between clubs, that you don't have the same huge cliff faces that you get in English football. So if you take the bottom of the Scottish Premiership, you get £1.1 million in TV money compared to 562 for the top of the Championship. Yeah, it's £500,000 quid, but the difference between the Premier League and the Championship is 90 million, and the difference between the Championship and League One is six. So because you don't have those huge gaps, you don't get clubs going into an arms race, spending money they haven't got on wages, with a view to trying to get themselves up to the next division.
This is not a done deal, though, is it? Because the clubs will have to vote on this.
That's right. So the Scottish Football Authorities have called a meeting, and we'll have to await. But that should be taking place in the next couple of weeks.
Okay. You cut off very dramatically there, Kieran. I was worried that something. Normally, I'm very good at telling when you finished a sentence, but it's almost like a dog had come in with some kind of wonky jump. But you may have heard, listeners, the first of the sound effects I predicted would happen. That's the director who decided to come and stand outside the open door of the room I'm in and do some directing on a shoot he's not currently doing. Apparently, he's somewhere in America. I had to glare at him. The message got through in the end. I'm quite good at glaring. I've got a proper good Paddington stare. Still in Scotland, Kieran, St Mirren have announced an end to their shirt sponsor agreement with immediate effect. Sounds quite dramatic.
Yes, this is a weird one. I mean, St Mirren's main shareholders are the Independent Supporters Association and an organisation called Kibble, which is an education centre for young people who've had challenges in life. So, you know, two blue chip, as far as I'm concerned, types of owners. But a few years ago, there was an organization called Skyview Capital, which seems to be some sort of American investment house. And they've been the sort of the prime sponsor of St Mirren. And they were due to renew their front of shirt deal for 21-22. And then at the last minute, they demanded shares in the club as part of the deal. And the club turned around and says, look, we're a family club. We're a community club. We don't feel particularly comfortable with having owners, even if they're a minority shareholders, who are representing the world of finance, which, you know, has a fairly checkered reputation, is the politest way of putting it. So fair play to St Mirren. They turned around and said, that's not what we thought we were signing up for. They cancelled the deal immediately, but they have said that they're in negotiations with a new sponsor who will be a major Scottish organisation. You know, I'm hoping from their point of view, because they tick a lot of our boxes in terms of all the work they do in the community, that they get that sorted and they continue to have good commercial income coming in.
Is that standard business practice, Kieran, that a potential sponsor might demand shares as part of
No, it's a new one on me, because normally the sponsors are looking to come in and move on, and they're just out there for publicity. You know, buying a stake in a club is very odd.
Yeah, I'm on about to say this, Kieran, because as you say, St Mirren are a club that we've talked about admiring in the past, but is there not a slight potential accusation of hypocrisy in that they were happy to take the money from this company to be shirt sponsors but don't want them to be part of the club?
Well, I can see that perspective. Money from financial services companies, you know, my club Brighton, we get it from American Express. Liverpool get it from Standard Chartered. Would I want American Express to be buying part of Brighton Hove Albion Football Club? No, I wouldn't. We're happy for them to be sponsors. They get publicity. The clubs involved get money. That part of the partnership works well. When you get financial services companies wanting to get involved in the decision-making process of a football club, it tends to be with a focus on the bottom line rather than anything else. And I think that's when I would start to feel uncomfortable. So I can understand it from St Mirren's point of view. We have spoken historically about other sponsors, and we've seen quite a few deals, you know, collapse, especially when linked to gambling companies, and that's not a criticism of the gambling industry. You know, my view is that front of shirt sponsorship should remain within gambling if it's just part of the overall advertising structure.
I don't have to look far for reasons to not like Brighton, Kieran, but American Express is one of them. I'll have you know, in times gone by when things weren't going too badly, somebody suggested I see a financial advisor, and he said, why don't you have American Express as your only credit card? Because you have to pay it all back at the end of the month. And I said, well, that's entirely why I don't want to have American Express.
That's the charge card as opposed to a credit card, though.
Of course, that's why you're here, Kieran, to correct me on that sort of thing. But charge card, credit card, whatever, it's still another irrational reason for not liking Brighton. I like this story. I deliberately didn't do any research on this story. I normally deliberately don't do any research on the stories, as you know, Kieran. But I deliberately didn't on this one because I was looking forward to the answer. A senior executive at West Brom attempted to negotiate a £25 million transfer deal that would have broken FIFA regulations. I'm hoping you're going to tell me that this senior executive went rogue and just try to raise some cash to buy somebody that FIFA didn't like the idea of.
Well, not quite. This was a story that was broken by Matt Lawton in The Times, and it is an intriguing one. It's to do with Matheus Pereira, who is a pretty decent footballer.
Good player,
absolutely. And it appears, according to the story in The Times, that the technical director of West Bromwich Albion, a guy called Luke Dowling, was caught, by the sounds of it, with some sort of fake shake arrangement, where somebody either filmed him or had a microphone out, and the proposal was that to transfer Pereira to China. Now the problem is that the Chinese government is not keen on conspicuous consumption in terms of big money transfers. So they were quite keen a few years ago, and then they said, right, we're not happy on this. So if you sign a player for more than £5 million, you've got to pay a 100% tax to the Chinese Soccer Federation, which then gets put into grassroots football. So if you're signing Pereira for £25 million, you've got to pay another £25 million on top. Yeah. So that makes the deal look not so good. So what appears to have been happening is that there was a suggestion that the club buying the player and West Bromwich Albion said he's not going to be signing for £25 million. He's just going to be signing for £5 million. Mm-hmm. And the other £20 million will be paid to the owner of West Bromwich Albion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what the owner of West Bromwich Albion then does with that money is up to him.
Right.
So, and West Brom fans were going, we sold him for £5 million. He's a cracking player. They would deliberately declare both clubs, and the way that FIFA organise things is that the buying club says, this is the fee we've agreed. The selling club says, this is the fee that we've agreed. FIFA check the documentation. Yes, both clubs have agreed the same fee, and they sanction the deal. So if both West Brom and the Chinese club put through a price of £5 million, and then £20 million ends up in the pocket of the owner, Guochun Lai, of West Bromwich Albion, in theory, he could give some of that money, or all of that money, to West Bromwich Albion, or he might not. We just don't know what was going to happen. But it looks as if the authorities have now got wind of this and are saying we're going to be scrutinising this potential deal very, very carefully.
Yes, those two words, in theory, were doing a lot of heavy lifting there, weren't they? also, do you know what? I've reached a stage where I don't talk to any sheikhs at all now. I'm not taking the risk.
Really?
It's just much easier not to talk to them. I've probably upset quite a few genuine sheikhs, but there's no point. Now, Kieran, this is a story we have been looking at for quite some time, and this is quite a significant development in it. Swindon Town owner Lee Power has been told by a High Court judge that he must offer to sell shares in Swinton Reds, the company which indirectly owns the club. Does he have to offer all of them, Kieran?
I think there's 85 shares up for sale, which would allow the person buying them to take control. There's a couple of people involved. There's the person that he has to potentially sell this is Clem something or other, not the drummer from Blondie.
Right.
But he's an Australian investor, and I think he's offered around about £2,500 a share. And it looks as if Lee Power might have had another bidder who was, in theory, willing to offer more. So clearly Lee Power wants to sell to the highest seller. But some of the documentation that went round effectively appears to indicate that Lee Power didn't have a choice. There's what we refer to as an option. And if Clem, I've forgotten his second name, if he enforces this, he could therefore make Lee Power sell those shares and transfer control. And what we presently have in the case of Swindon Town is that the fans are taking a no cooperation approach. Some people are not renewing season tickets, a bit like what we've seen with Blackpool historically, until there is a change of ownership. then they're not prepared to put money into Lee Power's Swindon Town. Now, Swindon's accounts came out last week, Lee Power has put money into the club. There's no doubt about that. But it's also noted when I went through the small print that he does run a company, which is sort of an agency, and that was paid a pretty large sum of money by the football club. Now, it could be that, you know, he's a football agent and therefore Swindon Town have benefited from his services, but that, you know, the fact that that had taken place further got up the noses of the Swindon fans who feel that, you know, the club is struggling at present and therefore perhaps perhaps he could have waived those fees.
If I ask this follow-up question very slowly, can you use it as an opportunity to Google what Clem's surname is? Because it's this lack of detail that could be costing us the BAFTA year on year, Kieran.
Yes.
Is what worries me. He's been told by a High Court judge that he must offer to sell shares. What are the circumstances there, and what happens if he doesn't follow the High Court judge's ruling?
Then he could be in breach. Right. So therefore, the danger is that he could end up and be, he could be fined. He could do a bit of time, and Clem Morfuni could, as I have Googled whilst we had that conversation, Clem Morfuni could therefore also acquire the shares as part of the deal.
Yeah, what we'll do is we'll get Guy to get his guy to just drop the Morfuni in. It will sound a bit weird, but it will sound like you're going Clem Morfuni. But this is the High Court. This stems from the other people that used to own the club taking him to court, doesn't it? Because it's such a complicated story that I sometimes lose the thread on why it's the High Court judges involved in the first place, to be perfectly honest.
Yes. So there are separate issues running with Gareth Barry's former agent, Michael Standing, who he thought he'd loaned the club £7 million, but according to the books, he hasn't. Does Gareth Barry actually own part of Swindon Town already? We just don't know. Trying to get to the bottom of the paperwork is proving to be very challenging. And therefore, you know, when there's a lack of paperwork and a lack of a trail, what you need is people with silver tongues to come to the rescue at very reasonable rates, of course.
Yeah. This episode of The Price of Football is brought to you by Beer 52, the world's largest beer club. Every month, its 170,000 plus members get a case of beer delivered to their door, each time with a different theme.
Past themes have included Belgium, Korea, California, and New Zealand, and they're adding new themes all the time. You can choose to have just light beers in your box if you're not into the darker stuff. Plus, each delivery comes with a magazine and a snack.
My case of beer and my snack saw me nicely through the France-Germany game. But if you'd like to see what they have on offer, go to beer52.com/POF now and use the code POF when you check out to get a free case of 8 unique craft beers. All you have to do is cover the postage costs of £5.95 and you can then pause or cancel your monthly order at any time, especially if, unlike Kieran, you don't like the darker stuff.
Yes, just go to beer52.com/POF and use the code POF when you check out to claim your free case of 8 unique craft beers from our good friends at Beer 52 now.
To another of our less favourite owners, the administrators of Bury FC say that Steve Dale's son has acquired the team's old memorabilia, including its trophies. And please don't tell me that includes the FA Cups as well.
Well, Stephen Wiseglass, who is the administrator of Bury Football Club, and you know, I've not been necessarily hugely giving him praise historically.
No.
It looks like he's done a fairly thorough job with regard to trying to trace the assets of Bury. And he says he cannot find what has happened to the trophies. Now, the trophies were actually transferred to another company, but it looks as if they are now owned by a guy called Christian Dale. And we've used this phrase before, and I'm going to use it again. The shit doesn't fall far from the arsehole, as far as I'm concerned, when it comes to other families in football and also the Dale family.
Can I just stop you there? Just to give Guy the opportunity to do another of those fake edits that are going to sound so bad. Can you just say to me, the acorn doesn't fall far from the tree? and we'll take a bet as to which one gets in.
No, I think this is fine. It's
go on, let's stick with that.
So you're absolutely right. I mean, Bury have won the FA Cup twice. Now, I've been sort of, again, monitoring this story on social media. This was broken in the Manchester Evening News first thing this morning. I think they got an early viewing of the administrator's report. And some of the fans seem to think we've now got some of the trophies back. But, you know, you've got to take everything on social media with a pinch of salt. Mm. You know, it would be absolutely appalling if this were to be the case, that the memorabilia of a proud club, of a club which has achieved great success, albeit, you know, a few years ago, if that was to be lost and there was no chance of it returning to Gig Lane when hopefully football will at some point in time return as well.
You see, this is what upsets us so much, Kieran, and it comes up in the interview with Niall Cooper that's about to happen. It doesn't matter how long ago Bury won the FA Cup, and people go, oh, well, a club went out of business, so what? It's a club that won the FA Cup twice, Kieran.
Yeah.
Yes, it was 1900, and yes, it was 1903, and I'm really sorry. There's no way around this. I was trying really, really hard not to mention Derby this week, but they did beat Derby 6-0 in that 1903 Cup final, which was a record score until Man City beat Watford. So they beat Southampton 4-0 in 1900. There's some brilliant photographs and footage of tens of thousands of Bury fans getting on the train to come down to Crystal Palace to watch those FA Cup finals. Somebody's photograph of the platform at Bury Station that the trains left from. These things are important. And the fact that the FA, you know, it's the same as the unseemly row between AFC Wimbledon and MK Dons about who got the FA Cup. Of course, AFC Wimbledon got the FA Cup. Yeah. Didn't, you know, and it's the fact that these, it's such a symbol of everything that's wrong that these people could get hold of the trophies of that proud club really, really angers me. And then on to another proud club, Sunderland. Their players are on furlough for a second summer to mitigate the financial impact of COVID.
Yes, and this does seem so strange because there was a lot of fanfare when Sunderland were taken over only a few months ago by Kirill Louis-Dreyfus, who is a billionaire based in Monaco. You know, lots of glamour, lots of money. And then it appears that, you know, in terms of backroom staff being on the furlough, fully understand that. But for football players, it's going to be 80% of the first £2,500 per month that they earn. So I'm assuming here that the club is topping them up to the rest of their salary. How much is it going to save Sunderland Football Club? If we've got 25 players and they're doing it for, say, 6 weeks, yeah, the club's going to probably save somewhere in the region of £50,000 to £60,000. So that's the taxpayer effectively subsidising a billionaire 23-year-old for £50,000 to £60,000, and it just doesn't look great. Because, you know, I'm absolutely delighted that Sunderland are out of the clutches of their previous owners, but you would have thought that the owner would want to have good publicity and to be seen to be doing the right thing. Why is it that Premier League clubs in the main have refused to use the furlough? Because, you know, when they did try to use it, the fans turned around and said, "No, you don't do that in our name." You know, Liverpool fans, Spurs fans, they all turned around and said, "That's not acceptable to the owners." And I think it's a shame. It what was hoping to be a big turnaround at Sunderland, it just taints it somewhat.
Yeah, let's try and be generous, and perhaps the 23-year-old billionaire hasn't had enough time yet to fully realise the economic impact of recent events on a town like Sunderland and how that looks. I'm sure somebody will let him know. Yes. This is another one that we've been keeping an eye on. It's sort of bubbling under Rochdale. And David Bottomley, the chief executive, has left the club this week.
Yes. And to say that there was a brief statement on the Rochdale website is quite an understatement. I think it went to about 12 words. He was associated with proposals to issue shares to there's a lot of conjecture in this, to issue shares potentially to some people who are probably on our wrong ends list, who connected with other clubs that have had financial issues over the course of the last 12 to 18 months. And the way that Rochdale works is that it's got quite a varied shareholder list. And what this would have done is that if you issue fresh shares, if you've got 100 shares to begin with and you issue 50 fresh ones, it reduces your stake in the company. Because let's say if I've got 20 shares in Rochdale, I've got 20% because I've got 20 out of 100. They issue fresh shares, I've now got 20 out of 150. So my proportion of ownership of Rochdale would decline. So he took an awful lot of stick at the EGM. So I'd heard that come through and I thought that was okay. And I've got one or two contacts at Rochdale, one of whom is my very good friend, The Prowler. and The Prowler, who I used to share a room with on cricket tour, he is Rochdale through and through. And he says, there's something else breaking today. And lo and behold, this actually broke after we put together the script from producer guy. The club has also now put up on its website in the last few hours that there are some form of hostile takeover in respect of the club, where it looks as if an agent acting for one or two people. I've got the names of those people. I'm not prepared to put that out in the public domain. They are trying to buy shares from individual shareholders with a way to sort of somewhat surreptitiously acquire a significant stake in the club. So the club have said, we're aware of this. We're not particularly happy of this. We will do what we can to prevent this from taking place. But we talk about proud clubs. You know, you and I, we've been to all of these clubs. We've been to Bury. We've been to Swindon. We've been to some. We've been to Rochdale and so on. These clubs do represent their local communities. And when people are trying to do things, indiscreetly, it makes me feel quite twitchy because, what happened to Burnley, what happened to Macclesfield Town, I don't want that happening to any other club. And some of the people involved, I don't have a great deal of faith in.
Two things, Kieran. First of all, that sound effect you could hear was a door slamming. It was the back door and it only slammed in one direction. So I'm not sure if it was someone storming out or storming in, to be perfectly honest. And secondly, I'm on a bound to point out that one of the reasons that Swiss Ramble has such a high reputation is that he very rarely seems to get inside information from somebody called The Prowler. That's why he's taken more seriously than we are.
Yes.
Who told you that? The Prowler.
I'm pleased. I've been on the prowl with The Prowler as well. I know how that name came about.
Well, let's not investigate why he's Rochdale through and through then, shall we? We just have a couple more stories to get through before that really interesting interview with Niall Cooper from Fair Game UK. Real Madrid president Florentino Perez, who will not let it lie, he simply will not let it lie, has again warned the English clubs who signed up to the failed European Super League that they must remain committed to the project. I don't know what he thinks is going to happen if they don't, but he's determined that they do.
Well, yeah, he seems to think that the European Super League is some version of Hotel California by the Eagles, and you can check out, but you can never leave. It's really bizarre. He is saying that he's now saying that the English teams were coerced by parties unnamed. So I think he's probably talking about the Illuminati here into leaving the Super League project. And he's also saying that it's a binding contract and football is dying. Mm. Now, I don't know. I watched England versus Germany last night, and at the end of that 90 minutes, I didn't think to myself, Well, football's dying now, isn't it?
No, France, Switzerland, nor Spain.
Oh, yeah.
Well, not at all. Yeah.
And he still seems to think that his proposal, which will result in Real Madrid generating a greater proportion of revenue than other clubs, is the way to save football. And I just don't get it. He's up there with Donald Trump in terms of being a fantasist in his pronouncements at present.
Yeah. Sorry, Kieran, Hotel California is by who?
Was it the Eagles?
Just say the name of the band again.
Oh, very good. Very good.
I'm just going to get him to clip out there where you say by the Eagles. I'm just going to get the Eagles. So on Twitter tomorrow, I'll be asking the question, Kieran, who's your favourite football club? The Eagles, of course. And still with Madrid, new manager Carlo Ancelotti has a couple of issues with the Spanish tax authorities. That didn't take long. He's only been there a week.
Well, yeah, but remember, he's been the manager of Real Madrid before, and then he left. So this relates to his first stint at the club. And it comes back to our very good friend, Image Rights. According to the Spanish authorities, Carlo Ancelotti had part of his remuneration paid to an image rights company, which he set up when he was in England. Because remember, he was also at Chelsea. And what the Spanish authorities do, which I really admire, is that they publish a list of shame when it comes to people that haven't paid tax. So Ancelotti is on it because if money was going to his image rights company, according to the tax authorities, he only paid tax at 10% instead of the 45% to which it should be paid. Dani Alves is on it as well. Neymar was on it last year, but he's not on the 2021. It's a bit like the rich list, I guess, in a way. And the Spanish authorities are now suggesting that Real Madrid freeze Ancelotti's wages until he's paid this 1.4 million euro to the tax authorities, and we take it from there. But yeah, 1.4 million probably isn't going to, it's not going to take him too long to earn, I suspect.
Hi, I'm Steve Lamack, and every week I'm joined by Music Allies Head of Insight, Stuart Dredge, on The Price of Music, the weekly podcast all about the money behind the music industry. In each episode, we discuss the very latest goings-on in the music business and dig into the finances behind the big stories.
So whether you're a music lover who just wants to know more about what really goes on in the industry, or you're an aspiring musician, manager or label owner who wants some inside knowledge on how Spotify's financial model really works, or what the future holds for independent live music venues, this is a show for you.
Subscribe to The Price of Music in your podcast app now. See you soon.
Just how can being on the list of shame escape your mind? At some stage when he's in negotiations with Real Madrid, is not his agent going to him, "Now, Carlo, are you sure this is not something we should be thinking?" No, I can't think of any reason why. You're not on any sort of list or anything? No, can't think of any sort of list. The list, I love the list of shame. But let's not encourage the English tax authorities to introduce a list of shame, Kieran, shall we? two more very quick stories before we get into our interview. First of all, Peter Crouch has joined the board of Dulwich Hamlet, who presumably don't have a TV and therefore aren't watching his dreadful Euro show at the moment. But that's for another pod. Why has Peter Crouch joined the board of Dulwich Hamlet?
Well, Peter Crouch started his professional career at Dulwich Hamlet at the age of 17. He was on loan from Spurs.
I've spent quite a bit of time in his company. He's never mentioned that, really.
And fair play to him. Dulwich Hamlet are going through a tough time at present. They lost 150 grand in 2019-20, and that was before COVID really kicked in. They now resorted to just trying to sell beer to just get a few quid in. Whilst people are watching the Euros and so on, and it's a fantastic club. I know it's in your neck of the woods. I think, perhaps we should do, when we go on tour. I think that'd be a fantastic venue as well. So, Crouchy has got him. Am I allowed to call him Crouchy? Was it Peter Crouch?
Crouchy's fine. He answers to Crouchy. That's fine.
Right, yeah. So he's decided to get involved to sort of highlight the plight of the club and to raise its profile and you know good luck to him in doing so. You know it's a fantastic community club and you know we want it to save and thrive and survive.
Yes, of course we do. Yeah, it's possibly my closest club. It's Tooting the Mitcham or Dulwich are my closest club, so it is a club close to my heart. And finally, Esther, which is a reference that only Martin Searle.
We're up there with the kids, aren't we?
I know. It's a reference only Martin Searle out of our listeners will get, out of our 60,000 weekly listeners. Most of them will be going, why is he calling Kieran Esther? But finally, Esther, which is a reference to a 1970s TV show. Why is there no Man of the Match award at the Euros?
Well, it turns out that the phrase Man of the Match has been acquired by a company called MOTM Limited, which has it as a trademark and a logo and as a textual phrase. So if you want to use Man of the Match in a competition, in theory, you have to go to MOTM Limited and ask for their permission. And that they've got this trademark in both UK and EU law. So therefore, what UEFA have said is, sod you lot, we're not going to do that. And instead, they've got the Heineken Star of the Match.
that didn't take a lot of getting around, did it?
It didn't take a lot. And if you take a look at the trophy that's given, it's one of these things that, when you go to Timpson's to, you know, at the end of season awards for your Sunday league team, like one of those. It really does. They were absolutely ropey. But completely deadpan, UEFA say, but this award is different. Because on the trophy, it's got a Heineken red star.
Well, it's like that clever chap who tried to buy the rights to the name 21st Century Fox in 1990. Yes. He thought they'll never get around this. That's a brilliant story. Well, also, it's one of the reasons why football needs to change somewhat, and which leads us into our interview. With Niall Cooper, and as well as being a Wimbledon fan and a board member of the Don's Trust, Niall is now also director of Fair Game, which is a campaign hoping to spearhead a football revolution. We're all for a bit of that, so we asked Niall along for a chat. Niall, I have many questions, but your campaign coincides so precisely with what we feel about the game here on The Price of Football that I suspect this may just turn into an angry chat followed by a march on Westminster.
That sounds perfect, Kevin. You happy to lead it?
Yeah, well, I like to be sort of third or fourth. Kieran's a better leader. Kieran will be out. He's got his own pitchfork. He'd be fine. He's there all the time. Niall, it's very kind of you to join us. You said recently this is not a breakaway, but it really could be a breakthrough for football. If you can, in just a few words, tell us about your aims. I'll tell you what, Niall, actually, as we're all South Londoners here, you can have a couple of sentences. How's that?
Oh, I love that. A couple of sentences. Quite to be a good South Londoner. Basically, what it is a bunch of football clubs got together and looked and realised that football's in a mess, as we've known for a long time. And we're after realistic solutions, realistic ability to change the game that we all love. You know, we've got people with lived experience in the clubs, but what we've done is also looked at getting some of the best minds, the best academics in to address those issues and try and present them as solutions for football. To look at things, you know, like the parachute payments, like wage control, all of those sort of the big issues that are really driving our clubs into all sorts of trouble, as you well know. So that's basically what we're trying to do. And it's the first time the football clubs have come together. That's the big difference.
Yeah.
And that's never happened before. So that's where I see us opening up a brand new avenue into really changing how the game operates and how the game works.
Well, we'll come on to those issues in a moment, but I'm interested in the timing. Obviously, we've been doing this pod for 18 months, so we know why somebody like you would want to do this now. But is this a Super League related thing? Has it been simmering? Was that the straw that broke the camel's back?
It has been simmering. I mean, I started looking at this back in November, when I was elected onto the Don's Trust board. Mm. And in these wonderful worlds of you're sitting there deciding what we're going to be doing for the next year, 2 years, whatever, the board kind of said, you know, look, we need to think about what can Wimbledon, my club, offer to the wider world. You know, what can we do beyond our normal community? And so I went off and spoke to a bunch of people, you know, football academics, journalists. I used to be a sports journo years ago. And, you know, out of that, they all, without fail, came back and said, just go and sort out the governance of football in the UK, you know, usual kind of more Sunday afternoon activity that you might do. So you know, I came back, said to the board, that's what they've asked me to do. That's what they, you know, we're looking at doing. So, you know, I went and spoke to a few other people. Obviously, we're a fans-owned club. So among the people we spoke to were the Football Supporters Association, a great chat, lovely guy called Ashley Brown, who works there. And, you know, we just coalesced around the point that football clubs have just never been leading on this. They've always kept their head below the parapet, haven't really said, you know, there's issues with football. You know, we're kind of all aware of it, but we've never really spoken out. So I got the mission to kind of try and bring them together. And that's where it started. So it started before the EFL debacle, the European Super League debacle. Apologies, the EFL. Debacle, unlike the European Super League.
Yeah.
So, and then the European Super League came along and we kind of went into overdrive. You know, we were doing that and it suddenly everybody was going, well, football really is a mess. It really does need to sort itself out. And, we'd kind of realised that before the ESL, but the ESL just put that onto sharp focus and, you know, the kind of momentum grew from there. And that's when we probably launched, you know, probably a couple of weeks earlier than we really, really would have hoped to have done. But, you know, the thinking was already there. The movement was beginning. And now, you know, we're at 18 clubs and I'm speaking to a whole bunch more right now, you know, looking to bring them on board. And the momentum just is immense at the moment. You know, change needs to happen, and it's been a bit of a roller coaster, but it's been a great fun and a great ride, and I can see change happening.
I love the fact that you went off and spoke to people about what needs to change, and they said governance, which basically means everything. Essentially everything needs to change, and I guess of all fans as well, Niall, I mean, AFC Wimbledon's have a lot more reason to want a change in the governance of football than many. Has the club been driving? Have they been behind you? Have they kind of let you carry on and do it on your own, so to speak?
It's a bit of both. You know, Joe Palmer is the chief executive of AFC Wimbledon and is supportive. And when I go to board meetings, the Don's Trust, it's harder to find a more, you know, unified support. I mean, they've been brilliant. They've been really good. You know, all of them are kind of backing what we're doing. And I mean, I'm freely leading it, but I'm reporting back to them all the time, because ultimately this is not an AFC Wimbledon led thing. This is a thing being led by, you know, those 18 clubs all together as a collective, which is, you know, I mean, the problem with that, Kevin, is that, you know, when it was coming towards the end of the season, and there's me going, well, you know, obviously following AFC Wimbledon's results as we busy dallying with relegation, but I was also looking at Newport County, Grimsby Town, Carlisle United.
Yeah, of course.
You know, all these other clubs that I've suddenly developed this massive soft spot for. And, you know, it becomes a ridiculously nerve-wracking for a whole load of reasons. It's bad enough being a football fan of one team. When you're suddenly a football fan of 18, it's, you know, it's quite a different momentum, different feeling. But again, they're all great clubs.
How did you decide, Noel, which clubs to approach first? And was it a case of identifying clubs that you felt already shared your aims and your ideas?
That was a long process, actually. Right. So we went through and we looked at, started the EFL. So we went and profiled every club in the EFL. We did research into all of those. We spoke to supporters, trusts, people who've been in board meetings, you know, ex-former board members, journalists, loads of intelligence went into it to try and identify the clubs that we thought would be most supportive. And we got down to a list of 26 to start off with. But then, you know, again, it's then finding out who's the proper person to approach those clubs. How do you go about it? There's quite a lot of research that went into it rather than just doing a kind of blanket email to everybody or, you know, just picking up clubs. We really wanted to identify the people that we thought were of a similar mindset to begin with, and then trying to expand from there. And what's been interesting is, you know, we're starting to see clubs call us now. which is kind of when you know we're obviously getting through to people.
You don't have to name any, Noel, but were you turned down by any of the clubs that you approached?
There's a couple that are a bit resistant. I wouldn't say they were turned down. They're kind of clubs with the right ethos, but they're risk averse. So right. it takes a bit of bravery to put your head above the parapet and call for change.
Yeah.
You know, you've got to think a bit about who runs these clubs, who are the chairman, who are the owners. And you know, they're all about, often about, which person do I need to rub up the right way? How do you do it? There's a lot of that going on in football. And so to have clubs that are willing to challenge the status quo and to offer alternatives takes a bit of guts. And I think where we're getting to now is because there's a significant number of us that they've got people that they can support and rely upon, so they don't have to just stand alone. Mm. So it's always going to be that point where we get to a critical mass. But the clubs, that there are clubs that are sort of waiting in the wings, if you like. So not they're not kind of said no, they've just kind of said not yet.
Yeah. And will you approach Premier League clubs? Because the chairman, the owner, one of the owners of your closest Premier League club, my team, Steve Parrish, has been very vocal about the effects of the ESL and about many of the topics you're talking about and we'll talk about. So it sort of strikes me that, it's that terrible thing that until you get that kind of Premier League publicity, it's really hard to get a campaign off the ground, isn't it, unfortunately?
It's a weird one, Mark, because when you talk about on a local level and you're talking about some of the clubs that we're dealing with, like Carlisle or Cambridge, I mean, those are one club towns. So actually, on a local level, the influence is huge. You know, obviously, we're South Londoners, and I still think of Wimbledon being the club in South London, obviously.
Yeah. Wrongly, but you're entitled to think that, of course.
I know. I could come back to many a day playing against Palace.
It's one of those strange rivalries that people outside South London won't understand. And there's a lot of Palace fans did a lot of stuff for Wimbledon when they were becoming AFC, and a lot of that good work, I have to say, was undone by Ivor Heller. But what can I say? God love him. But there's a bond between the two clubs. It's never been a rivalry in the same way that Palace Brighton is or Palace Chelsea is. So and it's not that long ago since, as you say, you were the only Premier League club in South London for a while.
Yeah, I mean it's an interesting. I mean the point being really that London's a different entity because there are so many clubs in London. So you don't have that one club town mentality that you do in a lot of other places in the country. And that's really where the difference does lie. So you kind of get, you know, like Accrington, small town, but everybody in Accrington loves Accrington Stanley.
Yeah.
You know, that you get that sort of attitude that does exist. So when you think outside the Premier League, that's where you see momentum. That said, you know, Kevin, go pick up the phone to Steve, you know, happy to have a chat. And I really mean that actually. I mean, there are a couple of Premier League clubs that we're speaking to discreetly. And I can't name them at the moment because it's really early stages. And obviously if they came on board, then it would be significant. Mm. I don't deny that. And I'd love Palace to be involved in it. They're not one of the clubs that we're talking to at the moment, but I think when it comes down to it, when you've got people that care about the pyramid, care about actually what the game means beyond just their club, because actually, what is the game if you're only one club? You know, it's you can't play in a league with just Palace, you know, or just Chelsea, or just Liverpool, or just Man United. You know, you actually need to have the other clubs there. You need to have that competition. You need the pyramid, because that's what makes the English game so unique and so special. So it takes clubs to really think beyond that and actually realise that there are some really big fundamental questions within football that need to be answered to make our club sustainable and to be there for the long term. And that actually means putting aside those rivalries that we might have for 180 minutes a season and building something far better. And that's basically what we're trying to do with Fair Game. And if Steve Parish is up for it, Kevin, give him a call. You know, pass me number across. I mean that in all seriousness, because we need to reboot the game. It's a mess, and you know, we need people to be brave enough to create a legacy that works for all football fans.
Well, I will try and put you in touch, you know, because sustainability and the pyramid are two of the things that Steve Parish is very, very passionate about. And there's something else that we're going to come on to talk to as well that I know he's passionate about, that I am in particular. But it's not just clubs, as you said, that you have on board. You talk about meeting an army of football experts, ranging from academics to accountants and lawyers, who are producing blueprints, as you put it, on new ways the game should be run. Have you heard of a chap called Kieran Maguire? He may be able to help. He's got some great anecdotes if the meetings get a bit dull.
Kieran Maguire has been, weirdly, I don't know if Kieran's possibly listening. He's listening. Kieran's already helped. So he's been on a couple of our. What we did very early on was develop workshops. We had some workshops to look at some of our kind of broad issues. And through those workshops, it helped us form what are the kind of nitty gritty, the meat behind it. You know, I'm not going to claim when I started this journey that I was an expert in everything football, but there were people out there that were. And I think that's the big thing here, Kevin, is that, you know, you can't just assume that you know all, that you know everything. And that the best thing for us and for the football clubs, we put that straight away and just said, right, we need to find the experts. We need to find the people that really know this stuff, that can study the economics, realize what the situation is, what the reality is. And then also then to say, well, what are the barriers? What is the legislation? What are the laws of the game that need to change? Where are the problems? How can we fix it? What else is there overseas? Mm. And so those are the kind of people we went and searched and tried to find. And I think we have found, to really start shaping, as you say, a new blueprint for the game. Because I didn't know the answers. You know, I knew some of the problems through my experience and sitting on the board of the Don's Trust, but I didn't know the answers. I didn't know what other solutions were out there. And so that's what we've tried to find, to look at stuff that's actually realistic. Because one of the things we've seen before is that there's been plenty of reviews into football throughout the years, loads. And most of them we're sitting on a nice dusty shelf, you know, buried somewhere in the House of Commons, going nowhere and doing nothing. And that's, we just can't have that anymore. It's got to be something that actually is deliverable and realistic and can happen. And that's the aim. It's that simple. You know, I don't personally want to be, you know, 6 months time having achieved nothing, you know, in 6 months time going, Tracy Crouch has found a review, much trumpeted, just sits on a dusty shelf with nobody caring about it, and it's got no teeth and it's achieved no change. What's the point?
It's strange as well, Noel, because often you speak to academics and accountants and lawyers who have a perspective other than football, and often they're the ones who say, well, why can't we do this? Why can't we change this? Because in football, if you only know football, sometimes you go, well, you can't, because it never has been. But sometimes people from outside come along and say, there's a new way of doing it, and you go, my God, that might work. And what I found interesting as well, because we have something else in common apart from how we think football should be, Noel, because the EFL has been in touch with you as well. You actually had a call from Nick Perry. That's one of the reasons he doesn't call us, because I can't get his name right. Rick Perry's not actually phoned us, although Kieran's had a couple of angry silences on his answer machine we think might be Rick Perry. But are you surprised that the EFL are communicating with you, or do you suspect that they want the same changes that you do?
I think the EFL are a bit frustrated beast. I think they do want the same changes. The thing with the EFL, you know, the people that are in it, most of them are actually in it for the right reasons. But the resources of the EFL compared to the Premier League, it's like, it's Man United and Accrington Stanley.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's what it is. You know, the EFL just doesn't have the resources to really do it and deliver the changes that are needed. And, you know, they have got some great people in there and some good ideas, and we speak to them fairly regularly. You know, and Rick Parry has phoned me up, and we have had great conversations. And I think largely we're on a similar page, but it's also a page that's built on frustration, built on why can we not change it? I mean, and there are you've got some clubs that just don't even really know much about they're owned by people that don't even know much about the town for which that club is based, you know, and don't really know much about the history or traditions. They're in it for some weird business reason that nobody quite understands. And there's a massive disconnect. And those are the clubs that frustrate EFL and I think football fans throughout. And it's, they're a bit of the barriers. So where I think the thinking with EFL is not necessarily in the wrong place, but with fair game, we can actually be much more braver. We can be much more robust in our outlook because we are clubs that think in the right way. We are clubs that are committed to community. We are clubs that are going, what the hell happened to Bury and Macclesfield? That is a travesty.
Yeah.
You know, and even things like, how could Cardiff City ever play in red when they're called the Bluebirds? I mean, that's just, you know, whatever. Or Hull City Tigers without consulting the fans. Those sort of little things. But for a football fan of those clubs, it's just ridiculous.
Yeah.
And those things need to just never even be on the table. And I think that's where we need to be moving towards, you know, really protecting the traditions and the culture and the history of football clubs that have been going for hundreds of years. You know, you just wouldn't want that to fold, not even on your, you know, certainly not, you know, with an AFC Wimbledon history. We've been there, seen that, and I wouldn't wish that on anyone.
It's funny, there's a friend of mine, an actor called Johnny Owen, who's a Cardiff fan, who's a very calm and quiet man. But so every now and again, I will try and stop that by just saying to him, what about that red kit then? And he just goes into complete but he didn't go for two seasons because of that whole thing. And people outside football just wouldn't understand why it was wrong of an owner to come in and make that change and not understand the cultural reasons why it was. Well, let's not get into individual clubs because we've already been talking for too long. And I deliberately didn't want to go into specifics of the campaign with Inar, because I want people to go to your website, fairgameuk.org. And I think people will understand just from the general chat what it is you're campaigning for. But of all the visions and principles outlined so brilliantly on that website, my favourite is, and I quote, that football can be a force for good and is at the heart of the community it serves, because that, more than anything, sums up for Kieran and I what football means and what a tragedy it was for the people of Bury and Macclesfield, not just the football fans of those clubs, but the communities in those towns. But is there one of the visions that you talk about on the website? Is there one that you hold most close to your heart, and one that you think is the one that you would, if you could only choose one to get done, what would that be?
God, that's evil. What an evil question that is.
Sophie's choice. Come on now.
gosh. Right. I'm going to go for the big one, which is we've called it the Sustainability Index.
Yeah.
I'm only doing this because this is cheap, right? Because the Sustainability Index is four things, so I'm cheating heavily. So this is the idea of putting all the money of the parachute payments into a central pot and allocating the money that comes out of it to clubs that pass a Sustainability Index. And the Sustainability Index includes whether you are financially well run, and you have to pass that. So things like, don't spend more on players' wages than you earn. Crazy one, that one. actually also things like the equality standards, which at the moment are little more than a tick box exercise, but actually saying if you want money, you have to pass that. Then things like a fan engagement index. So actually, are you a club that cares about how you engage with your fans, how you engage with your community? Again, fail that, and you don't get any of the access to the money. Those sort of things, that's where I go for. And then the idea that money is then spent on things that embed you within your community. Because what you ultimately want is you want clubs to be long-term sustainable. And to be long-term sustainable, that actually means you need to have a strong presence within your community so that people come through the turnstiles and care about your club. And there's a synergy between that town and that club that's unbreakable and is deep and meaningful. And that isn't there at a lot of clubs. And if you can encourage that, then you start moving away from the dependence on the owner coming in and pushing loads of cash into a club when they're just going to be losing it year on year. Because if that owner walks away, then that club is instantly at risk of financial peril. And that is just not the right model going forward. The right model going forward is clubs that are embedded in their community, that people care about that club, and that they're run financially in the correct way. And that is just not there. So that's my one. I say one, I cheated. I call it the sustainability index, and that just covers all of it.
That's fine. Yeah, that's a kind of Kieran Maguire level of cheating that I'm used to. Don't worry, it's fine. also, we can't talk about specifics because we'll be here all night. But the sustainability index, because I just love that notion that you also talk about, that it's not just about punishing clubs that do things badly. It's about rewarding clubs that do things well. And that sustainability index is part of that, isn't it? Because clubs that do the right thing, people should know about them. It's like we talk about, there's not a pod that goes by without us talking about Accrington, and as you've done, because it's a club that tries to do things in the right way for their community. And there's so many of them. But the nature of our pod is that we talk about the ones that are constantly in trouble, or the owners that are constantly pushing the rules or bending the rules or trying to move clubs like AFC Wimbledon 50 miles away from where they're born. So every now and again, the good clubs need to be rewarded, don't they?
I don't think it should be every now and again either.
All the time.
It should be like, you know, non-stop. I mean, one of our other clubs, a much smaller club, one of the smallest clubs in it amongst our 18, is Tunbridge Angels. And Tunbridge Angels were turned down for a grant because the club wasn't in financial peril.
That's
one way round, surely.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I mean, like, actually, if clubs were told, right, you're running well, you're running sustainably, you've got good community projects that you want to apply for, you want to build the infrastructure of your stadium so more people can use it and make it much more of a, you know, a 7-day-a-week operation, then surely you should be getting money for that and rewarding for that. And it will encourage clubs to think differently and actually think, well, actually, if I want to get this extra bit of money, the way to do it is to move towards a sustainable model, because then I get the money. And that's the reward that should be happening, rather than it's all right, I can run this club completely and utterly like a rubbish bin. You know, I can just throw money up the, you know, whatever. I was going to use a swear word, but you know the word, up the wall.
Yeah.
right, that sort of stuff. And then knowing that I'm going to get bailed out at the end of it. Right, wrong attitude, wrong way of doing it, wrong way of thinking about it. Or, you know, you're just... because that is just encouraging unsustainable behaviour.
Mm.
And it's the same with the parachute payments do the same deal with the championship, because people are just going, looking at it and going, right, the only way I can compete is if I spend way more on than I earn on players' wages to try and chase some ridiculous dream that may not happen. And if it doesn't, I end up like Derby, Sheffield Wednesday, or whatever. I flog my ground, lose the kind of long-term security that provides. It's just not sustainable. It's the wrong approach. And we need to look at that. We need to be encouraging people to behave in a way that means that the long-term security of that club is never at risk.
Mm.
Because, you know, owners are often only in it for the short term and fans aren't. We're there forever. And you stop taking the mick out of us or whatever. You know, that needs to be changed.
Mm. Niall, we introduced you as someone hoping to spearhead a football revolution. How can us two and our listeners help you with that?
The big thing now is really it's the political will. So it's about speaking to MPs, persuading MPs that this is a now or never moment, and that actually if they want to make sure that the clubs that exist in the communities across the UK are there and actually will be there for a long time and will be there to partly, you know, to encourage and build their community, then they're the ones who can make the change. So we'd want people to reach out to their MPs to say, right, back fair game, back what we're doing, speak to us and make sure that when it comes to it, that you really push for legislation, you push for the votes that will make a difference and that will change football for the better long term. And if your club isn't a fair game club, then you should be asking, why not? What have you got against sustainability, community, independent regulation, good governance, you know, equality standards, those sort of things? And they should be a no-brainer for anyone who cares about the history and traditions of a football club. So, you know, I'd say if you can speak to your owner of your football club, get them to speak to us. And, you know, try and back it. Try and make sure that football is sustainable and it's there for all of us for the long term. So those are the two asks. Speak to your clubs, speak to your MPs, and I think then we can make a difference.
Niall, it's been a pleasure to talk to you. And it goes without saying that we here at Price of Football support what you're doing 100%. And if there's anything we can do specifically to help you, we will do that. And I know that many, in fact, most, if not all of our listeners will be wanting to do the same as well. So we wish you the very best of luck with everything that you do in future, mate.
Thank you, Kevin.
Again, Kieran, I was one of those people, everyone we interview, you kind of go, I wish we had another hour, because he was brilliant. But there's so much you had to say, in particular about sustainability, which I know you would like. But I particularly like this notion that there should be more reward than punishment for clubs that do things well. Now, the focus is always, as it is with us, on clubs that are being punished for wrongdoing, when perhaps we should be identifying the clubs that are doing the right thing and rewarding them on a weekly basis.
Yeah, and let's showcase best behaviour, yeah, and reward it. I think it's a great idea. I was a little bit concerned when at the start of the interview you said you started talking about a couple of sentences, because I thought, are we referring to my Uncle Terry yet? but fortunately you weren't. Yeah, Niall was absolutely brilliant, and you know, fair game. Have got a very broad remit, and they're taking that to Parliament. That should be taking place on the Thursday as this show goes out. So good luck to them. They're very well organised. They've got some good people behind them and with them, and we wish them all the best.
Yeah, I'm also, of course, very proud. I say to quite a lot of our guests in a comedy way, have you heard of Kieran Maguire? He may be able to help. And they all go, oh, no, don't, secretly behind the scenes, Kieran's been helping for ages. And, of course, I'm very proud, but also a little bit annoyed. I'm clearly coming across as the one who's just doing nothing here. It's like me and Guy. Guy's on his gold sofa doing nothing, and I'm on my ordinary sofa doing nothing. Well, Kieran is busy propping up the revolution. So that's good to hear that you're helping out. And if you'd like to help us out by making a small contribution to our always free to air pod, then that would be very kind of you, and you can do so by going to patreon.com/priceoffootball. If you have any questions for our next questions pod or some in the future, because I know we have a bit of a backlog, but we are getting to all of them, and it's questions@priceoffootball.com. It's been a slightly longer pod than usual this week, but I think it's justified it. But we always have time to hand over to Kieran Maguire for his customary farewell.
Well, thanks again, folks, for the feedback. It does keep us occupied. We do read it all. So if you could go onto the icon, the Apple icon, if you could give us 5 stars, it makes a difference. Somebody hilariously gave us 1 star and wrote 5 stars in the narrative, which I thought was very, very good.
It's good work.
Yes. Also, if anybody wants to sponsor the show, they're welcome to do so. Our deal with Manscaped has come to an end because they said that, given the age profile of our audience, the number of middle-aged or slightly elderly gentlemen who wanted to shave their gonads wasn't enough to warrant continuing the sponsorship arrangement. But we got a good audience out there. We got loyal listeners, and we got plenty of them. So if you do want to get in touch, just questions@priceoffootball.com. Other than that, look after yourselves.
Yeah, frankly, I don't want to start a war with Manscaped, but, you know, they knew what they were getting. We did warn them.
Yes.
We did warn them. We have very few listeners under the age of 25 who are likely to get involved in that sort of behaviour, which is why I think our current sponsors, Beer 52, will be the start of a long and productive relationship, and welcome aboard to them. I sounded very corporate there, ending that pod, didn't I? The Price of Football. Price of Football.